brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
I'm Monty Cage, every foul wicked spirit in the host, the news.
20 minutes, that Gorilla Bay, on the news, right now.
On the news, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
You really happen to have a serial crime.
Necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downey, and with me on the line is my co-host, Zach Black. Zach, how are you today, my man?
Excellent, man. Excellent. It's a beautiful day here in sunny San Diego on the beach, enjoying myself.
Right on. Well, we had the pleasure here of actually having a rainy morning and a rainy early afternoon, which means that it's brutally humid outside right now, but still not nearly as hot as it's been over the past few days, so I can't really completely complain. Just whatever extent one can complain about the humidity outside. But this morning was well worth it, as I didn't have to turn my air conditioner on until well afternoon.
Ah, yeah. See, we don't even have an AC unit in where I live, man. It's just we have a heater, but not an AC unit, because it never gets that hot. You know, what's weird about the humidity, you would think that living 100 yards from the ocean, it'd be humid here, but it's not. I guess humidity comes from vegetation and fresh water. I'm not sure, because it's not humid here at all. It's actually pretty nice.
I'm not really sure. I think the humidity had more with the air being trapped without movement, or the moisture in the air being trapped without movement, and not as much to do with the amount of water around you, so to speak. So because there's a constant breeze coming off of the ocean, that's probably why you don't suffer with the same humidity problems that we have. I mean, this is, of course, just my, my guess at what's going on with that. I don't really know what the scientific facts are behind it, except for that when the humidity level is high, TC Downey is a very miserable person. So,
yeah, I would say that sounds pretty accurate.
Right on. So, let's see. Last weekend was Sins Gatherings. You had your little soiree going on at your house, and it got kind of crazy at the Sorrell household. That was pretty cool, all in all. A lot of that was broadcasted live on Satanic International in the chat room there for you folks who like to actually talk to people and not sit around playing your internet Dungeons and Dragons, but you really want to have some good conversation or whatever. Sin's the place to go. Where are we? I guess we should maybe start into this topic, and it's going to be kind of odd discussing this with you in a way, because, well, even though you're a parent, you never actually had to go into thinking about your practices as, of parenting.
Right, right. You know, yeah, I mean, that, you're right, because I am a father, but I've never raised a child. But I have given some of this, you know, serious thought to the question. You know, because I eventually plan on raising a child at one time. So I think I can handle this.
All right. Well, that's good. Here's my thing, okay? Most of the time, I think that parenting is an afterthought. You know, after the child has been born and as things are kind of developing, I think people, you know, go through the whole little trial and error things without actually having any kind of overall philosophy in their parenting. I, on the other hand, spent the entire gestation period, or the pregnancy for people who don't know what I'm talking about, I spent that entire period of the pregnancy considering a few really kind of awkward options. are not even options, but things, you know, traditional parenting in the United States of America, whether our atheistic people want to admit this or not, there's a lot of morality built into it that stems from our, well, overly Judeo-Christian background in this country. So it's kind of neat in the fact that, you know, as you're going through these things, you have to really sit and think about the consistency of the things that you, you know, think that you're going to do in the future. And what I mean by this is the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, am I going to raise this child as a Satanist? Am I going to try to build satanic ideologies into this child's thinking and, you know, get him fairly exposed to whatever traits you might think are inherent to the subculture from an early age? And then I really got to thinking about it, and I decided the best thing that I could do for him is to not expose him to any type of religion or philosophy, but rather just to kind of give him his options as he starts asking questions. Now, the reason for this is because I didn't want him to be a teenager angry at the world, wondering what it is that he believed, and then feeling like I somehow was superseding some kind of moral dictation to him. You know, so I've based pretty much everything thus far that I've done with him on what the law says, really. That's, you know, that's what I've tried to keep in fact. You know, the law says it's wrong to steal, so if you don't want to go to jail, don't steal. You know, these are the kinds of, you know, things that are built into the type of morality that I was trying to, you know, put into him. Everything I wanted him to have more of an ethical perspective than a moral perspective, if that makes sense. I wanted him to, you know, contrast it purely with the law of man rather than, you know, on some, I don't know, even if it's well-founded, wishful thinking of moral compass, you know, that I might have. So that's been my first challenge, is to keep that consistent throughout my discussion with him about it. You know, as he's gotten older, certain things have started to come into play. Like this year I got the, where does Easter come from? What is Easter question? Which was the first of its kind for him. And I was, you know, nice enough to actually give him, you know, some of the background to it. You know, I went to a couple different web pages where there were some pictures of, you know, pagan festivals and everything, and I kind of described to him in as simple of terms as possible what, you know, what was really going on here with this. And then I, you know, of course, I also told him some people believe that, you know, there are other things that are associated or attached to this, you know, and these are what those things are, and I just kind of left it at, you know, them being what other people might think of it at the time. So he's got a pretty good hang on everything in terms of that type of thing at this point. I think he views, you know, Santa, Jesus, fucking the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, and all that other stuff, all in the same kind of light, which I think in the future will make it very easy for him to shatter those paradigms and move into a higher understanding of life. So, right. What, you know, and you said you've thought, you know, about what methods you might use in parenting. What do you think that you would do different than what actually happens in a household traditionally today?
Well, first off, what I would do is, you know, you brought this up earlier about, you know, people just automatically thrust the religious customs on the children. I think, first off, if I were to have a son, I would not get him circumcised. I think circumcision is nothing short of just genital mutilation of children. I mean, there's really no hygienic reason for it anymore. We have this, you know, invention we call soap. The only reason we do it is because it's traditional, you know. And that's the first thing I would do is not have – if I had a son, I would not have him circumcised. Obviously, if he wants to be circumcised, he can do that later down the road himself if, you know, he feels it's such a social stigma, which he might. But, you know, I would leave that choice up to him. Second, I would just raise my child ethically, like you had mentioned, not morally. I would, you know, if you mentioned, like, stealing, the way I would approach that is, well, you know, you don't steal. Stealing's wrong in most situations because, well, would you like somebody to steal your toys? Would you like somebody to steal from you? Well, then you probably shouldn't steal from somebody else. You know, and I would just base it on an ethical point. Now, as they got older, you can kind of base that on laws, but I don't think children have a concept of human laws and stuff. So, but I also think that children are born with a natural sense of what's right and wrong. I think that morality being bestowed upon them and being forced upon them is actually what creates, you know, the criminal activity and the rebelliousness and the neurosis. But I think that, you know, naturally the vast majority of children are born with a natural sense of what's right and wrong. And all you really need to do is just encourage that. And I think that they'll be okay, even without religion, even without religious morals.
Right on. Right on.
And as far as, like, exposing, like, when it comes to holidays, well, we'll take Christmas for an example. If I had a child that asked me, what was Christmas all about, I would say, oh, well, there's this group of people who believe, you know, in this. And so they celebrate Christmas. You know, but here, you know, I don't believe in this. I think it's, you know, it's just kind of a folklore. It's just kind of a fairy tale. Instead, though, what we celebrate the winter equinox. So, you know, you get your presents 4 days earlier than everybody else, you know?
Right on. Right on. Yeah. Well, see, I actually came to a point with that where I tried to decide if I was going to celebrate some kind of alternative holiday system. And what I came to in my mind instead, to give him cultural diversity, I decided that we would just go ahead and celebrate all of the holidays, you know, that are out there for every culture that we find out about. You know, like, there are some, obviously, I don't celebrate that I know nothing about. But the ones that I do know about, I do always celebrate him. And so what I've done in place is given him a way to appreciate later diversity in culture and thinking. One thing my mom did for me that was absolutely wonderful as a kid is she was not really limited in span of dietary pursuits. As a matter of fact, my mom tends to appreciate foods from every culture there is. So growing up as a kid, you know, we learned that we liked, you know, Greek gyros. We learned that we liked corned beef and cabbage. We learned that we liked, I don't know, lasagna. I'm just throwing out these different things. We liked curry, you know, and so what ended up happening is, in my mind, it was neat to see what other people were doing. It wasn't so much, you know, I have this one particular preference and I'm going to stick to that. You know, I started looking into, you know, different types of food. There's not much on the food chain now that I've not tried or eaten. You know, and that, I think, directly relates to the fact that my mom was very, you know, she was very liberal with, you know, dietary selection. We got to try everything. As a matter of fact, the rule was you had to try at least once. So I don't necessarily see that as being a bad thing.
No, not at all, man. You know, and it's I don't know how large your family was, but my mom was a single mom who raised four kids. So unfortunately, we had the same five meals, you know, over and over. You know, hamburger helper, macaroni, meatloaf, spaghetti, lasagna, and occasionally pizza. So that was pretty much it.
Right on. Right on. But anyway, the whole point about the food thing was I'm kind of hoping that the same effect will happen with the holidays with him. I want him to not only celebrate and embrace his own culture and heritage, but I want him to do the same with everybody else's, not meaning that he takes it on for himself, but that he understands why people celebrate what they celebrate and, you know, has an appreciation for customs and stuff that have developed, since the beginning of time. So, you know, in my opinion, this makes him more human than the average human. With that being said, I'm trying to think of other things that might be different in terms of parenting. I don't know who picked this topic. I'm happy they did. I like talking about this kind of thing, and I think that this is definitely something that people can benefit, whether they're parents or trying to make the decision as to whether or not they want to become a parent. It gives a perspective of some of the things that, you know, we really need to consider. You know, when you truly separate yourself from any ideology, when you truly separate yourself from, you know, some custom or tradition that's been carried for years and years in your family, sometimes there are remnants of, I don't know, cultural bias that slip through that still end up being, attached to your parenting style. Like, here's a good example. That the best example here is, and see if I can think of what I was just fucking talking about, because my brain sort of just crapped out here. What the hell was I saying just before I went into that brain cloud? Because this just isn't cool.
I wasn't listening to tell you the truth.
All right.
You were talking about what else to talk about regarding, you know, holidays and stuff like that.
Right, yeah, but then I went in, I was heading towards, an example. My current significant other, she has a big problem with me allowing Regan to, you know, drink some of my beer or have some of the rum and coke that I have or whatever. But what ends up happening in my mind, my mom had this philosophy that if you were old enough to sit at the dinner table, you were old enough to have a drink with the family. As a result of that, all three of her children do drink, but not a single one of them does it in an abusive or compulsive fashion. So, that's my thoughts here are that I let Regan, myself, have some of my beer or take a sip off of the rum and coke because down the road, I don't want it to be a big issue. I don't want it to have the appeal that it had to some of my friends when we were teenagers. I don't know that people know this, but when I was 14, my best friend at that time.
Hello? 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 I think we lost Bizino, guys. I'm pretty sure we lost Bizino, so. You know, to kind of carry on until he calls back, if you guys can hear me. I'm not sure if you even can. You know, when it comes to religion, right, and what are you going to do? How are you going to indoctrinate your child into religion if you are going to at all? I mean, as a Satanist, I mean, I would probably just raise my child to be non-religious, not specifically a Satanist. You know, just to be non-religious, to question all things. When he gets old enough to start to understand, you know, different philosophical paradigms, I would, you know, I would explain them to him. This is what Christians believe. This is what Muslims believe. This is what Hindus believe. This is what Buddhists believe. This is what Satanists believe. And that's kind of how I think is the best manner to approach it. And I see that people, majority of people that are raised non-religious come out to be non-religious. I mean, if they don't have a specific brand of morality, you know, forced down their throat from an early age, they typically grow up to be questioners, thinkers, criticizers, which usually leads them to the path of agnosticism, to being agnostics or atheists or even Satanists. Hard to say. Beast, you going to join us anytime soon?
Yeah, I'm here, man. Although I'm not sure how long the rest of the show is going to go for because my Skype connection totally blew out. And I called in on the host line, and it looks like we actually have some callers sitting here on the switchboard. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and grab one of these up here. 616 area code.
Hey, guys.
6 months. Hey, what's going on?
It's Lexi.
Hey, Lexi, how are you?
Hey.
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
All right. You've got some 2 cents to add here on something?
I think she's got 3 cents. How many cents have you got? Two or three? Two.
I have two kids.
Okay.
And, you know, both of them are being raised in separate households. And, my son, he lives with his grandparents on his father's side, and they are Puerto Rican, so they're Christian. They're really, really Christian, but my son seems to only care about video games. My daughter is being raised in my mom's household, and she's also Christian, but she's going a completely different way. My theory on it, at least in religious background, I'm letting both of my kids grow up as kids because I think the most important part about it is that they learn how to be children. They grow up that way. Later on, you know, I'll discuss religion and perspectives and philosophy and stuff like that.
Right. Cool. What is your involvement with, like, me? And I know they're pretty young, but as they get older and start asking the hard questions, you know, how are you going to take it? How are you going to deal with that?
Well, my biggest first question came from my five-year-old about the Easter Bunny. She looks at me and goes, "Is the Easter Bunny real?" And I kind of stopped for a second, and I wasn't quite sure how to even answer that question. Something silly like that stops you dead in your tracks because he's gone the past 5 years. But, oh, the Easter Bunny's going to come. Oh, Santa's going to come. When they start asking me questions, I'm hoping they don't just come out right and say, "Does God exist?" Because I'm pretty sure that would stop me in my tracks, too. But I guess the way I would approach it is to show them the different arenas they have to work with. I'm fairly open-minded, so I can pretty much talk myself out of a corner for the most part. My biggest concern is with my son, but that's a completely different topic. It's got nothing to do with religion. So I guess the big questions don't necessarily bother me all that much, and when they come to pass, I'll just do it the best that I can with what I have.
You know, a question like is God is real? The way I would personally deal with it is I would say, you know, I don't think so. I personally don't believe so. There are a lot of people that do believe so, and this is why they believe it. This is what they believe. You know, what do you think? That's kind of how I would approach a subject personally.
Yeah, that's like a real Dr. Spock kind of approach to it that you're mentioning there, man. So I really have a firm appreciation for that, that Dr. Spock approach that we're talking about. That was kind of the same way that a lot of the things that my mom did when she was raising me. I'm trying to think of what to explain. Like one of the things that she did when I was just starting into pubescent phases, and it was becoming obvious that I was changing, she bought me a book that was very detailed about the male anatomy, the female anatomy, how it worked together, and it was done in a very make up your own mind type of approach. There were not just explanations for heterosexual sexuality. There was explanations for bisexual and homosexual sexuality in there, as well as, all the scientific data that was available at the time that I was that age.
I got one of those books, too. I got one of those books, too, but I never read it. I just masturbated to the pictures.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm that kid that was geeky enough to read that stuff. I mean, I spent whole summers reading really weird books. So, my fifth grade summer, I was reading the college-level algebra book that I had found at a thrift store for a dollar. So.
See, my parents were the opposite. My parents didn't do stuff like that. They avoid explaining things to me, like the plague. When they caught me playing doctor with my downstairs neighbor, they sat me down and kind of looked at each other and went, did we really have to deal with this at 6 years old? So I never got any of those books. I kind of had to pick things up on my own, and I think that's something that I don't want my daughter to have to do. So I make it very, I let her know that questions are welcome about anything, because my parents didn't do that.
Right.
Right.
That's important. You need to allow your child to, know that if you have any questions, come to me, because you'd rather be the one to answer that question than someone on the street or, another peer their age. Quite possibly has no fucking clue what they're talking about. I remember the doctor phase too, and I started at the doctor phase at 5 or 6, And it's funny they call it doctor because that's kind of what it is. It's like, hey, what do you got under that dress? This is what I got under mine. Hey, why does mine look different? Can I touch yours? Okay, can you touch mine? Oh, I see now. You're weird.
Yeah, another thing that I find that especially like in that area and arenas that parents feel uncomfortable with, they tend to come down on a child when they find it out more often than they're supportive of it or encourage knowledge of it. That was something else that my parents did. I remember I was afraid for the longest time after having the talk with my parents. And I don't want that to happen with my daughter or my son either. So, but it's difficult because sometimes it can be rather shocking. My son went through that. And it took me a minute. I had to step back and think about it and think about my own experience and then bring what I had to the table to my son and talk to him about it.
I kind of got the same deal where it was I got the sex talk at the age of like 6 because I got caught playing doctor with somebody at the after school program where I had to go before mom picked me up, and boy they punished the shit out of me at school. They made me sit in a corner for like 3 hours. I was crying. They told me I was fucking horrible. They really did a number on me. It made me feel really bad, like what I did was really bad, which is, the worst thing you can do to a child. And My mom was kind of cool about it, though. She wasn't upset. She kind of dealt with it like it's not that big of a thing. It's just not appropriate things to do at school with, you know, other boys and girls. You know, hopefully it was with a girl. I don't quite remember, but whatever it was, you know. So the children's sexuality is a big fucking deal, you know. I mean, you said I did a lot of reading as an early teen. I did too, but I did so a little bit later, like after, like right around the age of 14 or 15, I really got into like psychoanalysis, read a lot of Freud, Carl Jung, you know, Wilhelm Reich. But at this point, I was already sexually active, so, you know, but I kind of saw a lot of the flaws in the ways that my parents approach things. And I read this great book called Children of the Future, which is written by Wilhelm Reich, and it's about how to raise children in a way where they don't become neurotic, sexually repressed, frustrated, moralistic, you know, adults. And I'm going to base my parenting when I have a child that I have to raise off the book Children of the Future by Wilhelm Reich.
Right on, man. I've never read that book, but the short description that you've given of what it is or what the thought behind it is, it definitely sounds like it's worth a read, so I'll probably be looking for it after the show sometime to take a look. Although I think I've developed a... Go ahead.
I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. My phone's probably just echoing. So one of the reasons why I don't use this phone when I'm calling into the shows anymore, because if I'm sitting in just the wrong spot, I get this echo that makes it hard for me to focus. Anyway, I believe I've kind of developed a philosophy for parenting my child that will lead him free of all of these things when it comes to becoming an actualized adult. He will at the point of growing up, hopefully, have gone through enough things, and I will have been creative enough in installing the lessons that I wanted to I'm not even really sure here at the moment. I'm kind of losing my thoughts of what I'm saying. I know I was saying something, but what the hell was I saying? Kind of beyond me. The problem I'm running into right now, why I keep forgetting shit, is because I'm having all these technical difficulties back here behind the switchboard. Well, before I let this next caller come on, does anybody have any other particular topic that they'd like to cover on this while I've got you two on the air?
Well, I have a question. You know, I was listening, you said you guys, you celebrate all of these holidays, you know, good cultural background. I'm assuming he believes in Santa. Do you think that by telling our children or letting them believe in things like the Tooth Fairy, Santa, or the Easter Bunny, are we leaving them with, like, false hopes? You know, because they believe in Santa, he's going to bring all these presents, or Easter Bunny's going to come, and then all of a sudden, you know, they grow up and they're like, well, that's not real.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Zach.
Okay. Lexi, I personally do think it's misleading them, and it's something that I'm not going to do. Be very factual about it, you know. Christmas is this. You know, there's no Santa Claus. It's just a fairy tale that people like to tell their children. But in reality, there's no Santa Claus. I'm the one that's going to buy you presents, and we're going to celebrate Christmas a few days early because you're that special. You're going to get presents before everybody else. You know, Easter Bunny's not real. But, you know, it is fun to hide Easter eggs and pretend, you know. The Easter Bunny's kind of an imaginary friend that comes and drops off your eggs and hides your stuff and gives you candy, you know. So I don't think that children should be, limited from celebrating certain religious holidays. I just think that they should be shown to be what they are, you know, and if you feel that you want to celebrate them so that your child can participate when everybody else is around them, that's one thing. But I think you can do it in a way where there's a better understanding. You don't have to mislead them. Because I think ultimately if you mislead your children, they're going to start questioning a lot of the things that you tell them. Well, if you lie to me about this, what about this?
Here's the thing. And why I only kind of half agree with what you're saying at the moment, Zach. Number one, children aren't capable of conceptualizing the type of concepts and I want to say morals, but the actual thought value that each of these holidays is meant to represent. So, you know, if I was ever asked by my child if Santa Claus is real, I would never lie and say no or leave it unanswered. I would tell him, no, he's not real. But up until that point, I personally think that it is important for the child to learn cultural, customary traditions, ethics, morals, whatever you want to call it, the lessons that are actually contained in the stories surrounding these holidays and why we celebrate them, because it reinforces something that I know is probably a dirty word in Satanism, but it's something I strongly believe in, and that's empathy. You know, a child needs to be brought up with the ability to be empathetic. If that is not there, then we risk losing the child to completely selfish notions. To some point, that's a great thing, but if it hasn't been logically vectored right, well, that's where John Gacy, Ted Bundy, Charles Manson type people come from, is when they can't enact and use empathy to determine what serves them best. And this is purely my opinion, but allowing them to practice these customs and stuff, when they finally do bring that question, is this real? I can say, no, it's a myth, but it's a myth used to teach you a lesson. And by the time that they're old enough to actually question whether or not it's real, they're old enough to finally understand what the lesson is behind what they're learning. And then I would go through and explain whatever the lesson is. And I hope in the future that encourages them to not trust absolutely everything that I or his mother say, but to question it, because if I'm slipping, I need checked, and if it's coming from my own kid, that's even way better. So that's kind of my thinking on it, but I can completely understand where you're coming from and not wanting to mislead them.
Right on. You got anything to add, Lucy?
Okay.
All right.
Do you have any callers?
Let's go ahead and bring up 757 area code. Well, granted, the little button pushes or whatever. There it goes. 757, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Ben. How you guys doing?
Hello. What's going on?
I wanted to comment on like planning for everything. You can't always plan for everything because you never know what your children are going to come at you with. And, I've been at this for 16 years now, and just all the different situations that I didn't know how I was going to approach it until the situation presented itself. Like, for instance, I also didn't raise my child with any particular religion or, I didn't indoctrinate him with my own beliefs. And then when he would go to school, he would get, like all the children all around him and say, what? Your parents didn't teach you about this, or, your parents are going to hell. And I had to figure out ways to equip him for dealing with that, because you never know what children are going to throw at each other. And so he felt alienated because he didn't believe in things like the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus, and he felt left out. And to me, like, well, why didn't you teach me about this, this elf that comes and drops off toys? But I did in a very realistic fashion, just like, Zach said he would approach his children, that, yes, there is this holiday tradition, Here are some of the traditions that people practice. You know, yes, we put up a Christmas tree, but he knew that I was the one putting the presents under the tree. And so then he would go to school and have the other children talk about Santa Claus, and, you know, he was faced with that, and I didn't account for that. So then I had to deal with that, you know, almost like, you know, recon afterwards, you know, instead of beforehand, you know, equipping him to deal with the children and their beliefs, because they've been indoctrinated by their parents, so they assume that all children believe like they do. Did you have you face that at all with your child?
Personally, at this point, no. I have not really actually gotten to the point where he's questioned the existence of any of these things, but I thought about that, and that's I think what I was trying to say just a few minutes ago was why I'm allowing him to practice these things and teaching him these things. You know, it's just until he starts to question, and then at that point I'll put the right information in his hands for him to make it a logical decision based on it that he's comfortable with, you know?
Sure, yeah. And that's what I thought I was doing, too, but this started really young. This is when he was much younger, like first, second grade. You know, he actually came home from school one day crying, and the way he described it, it gave me an immediate vision in my head of, like, Village of the Damned, like all the little Village of the Damned children were all around him going, why don't you believe in Santa Claus, you know? And he knew what I had explained to him, you know, at that age of understanding, but he wasn't equipped for the reaction from the other kids because he, too, didn't have the same belief that they did, you know? And then they became very insulting, you know, saying, well, your parents are stupid, or you have dumb parents, or your parents are mean, or that kind of thing. And so he was almost ill-equipped to deal with the mob, basically.
Right. Well, I mean, no matter what, the child's eventually going to have to deal with the mob. I don't think that there's any way that, you know, you can build it all up and then not expect when it's torn down. Or even if you never build it up at all, I don't think there's any way that they're going to avoid that kind of conflict. You know, I mean, think about, you know, the persecution that a Hindu child might face in you know, public schools of America.
Sure.
You know, I think that it's just kind of human nature. But, you know, one thing I will do for Regan definitely is once he's gotten to the point where he understands the difference between a mythological figure and a real person, I'll kind of, you know, joke a little bit subtly to him about how ignorant people are that still believe in these things. And hopefully with that, give him some comfort knowing that he might have won over these other people because he wasn't lied to about these things, but it was kept from him until he asked the right question. There's kind of actually been a process that I've been working all the way around with him. I wait with most things until he asks the right question, and I always tell him it's because he asks the right question that I'm able to give him these answers that he's getting. So,
yeah, and I try to have some other dialogue with my child so that he can, you know, develop his own critical thinking skills to be able to make decisions on his own and figure things out on his own, too.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the first thing that you have to teach a child is critical thinking, which is what actually we started talking about this weekend, me and Regan. He wanted to know what thoughts were. I mean, he's got them, he knows he's got them, but he wanted to know, like, where they came from, how they develop, and, you know, and of course, that's a very difficult subject to tackle with a four-year-old. But so we started discussing the fact that thinking like anything else is something that you have to practice to get better at. You know, and that's kind of what I've been going with it with him. I'm going to, you know, break down the fact that if he thinks about how he thinks, you know, he'll get better at thinking.
Yeah.
Now, I've actually had another caller hanging on the line for a while now, so I'm going to go ahead and grab them, too. 615 area code.
Hey, guys. It's Bobo.
Bobo, what's up?
Hey, Bobo.
Not much. Y'all tell me to call in.
Bubba's got her 5 cents to throw in here. How you doing?
I'm good.
Bubba was a mother of five, so if anybody has any experience,
right.
This is her.
Well, I wouldn't say that five kids isn't a difficult thing. I think even just having one gives that experience. Five kids has got to be a whole different mess, though. I'd agree. How have you I kind of know your background and are you going through the same process that your dad went through with you, or are you being more open about what you think?
We're pretty much neutral. I don't really say anything one way or another. I never really have. They've been to church. Half of the kids like church and half don't. Like my oldest son, he's 8. He won't go. He refuses to, which is fine. You know, I've just kind of let them make their own choices about it. We've also done I don't comment, like, with Santa Claus, like y'all were talking about that. I didn't tell them Santa did exist. I haven't said that Santa doesn't exist. They've come to their own conclusions about whether or not Santa exists, and they'll even argue with each other about whether or not Santa exists, for example, you know. But, yeah, I try to let them make their own decisions there as much as possible.
Right on. I mean, obviously, you want to let them make their own decisions as much as possible. But what I'm curious about here really is your dad kind of indoctrinated you with the Christian belief, but at the same time put in those thoughts that you think that you've said were key to you kind of coming to the mindset that you are now. Why didn't you choose to kind of go the same way with your kids?
Well, I have to a certain degree. What my dad did, where it worked really well for me, but it also caused a lot of confusion because injecting Satanism, especially LaVeyan Satanism, in Christianity makes for really strange bedfellows. Like, my whole concept of Christianity is off in comparison to what most people think. You know, like, I pretty much grew up thinking that Christianity was LaVeyan Satanism at the end of the day, which adds to a lot of confusion when you get older and start talking to other Christians and they're looking at you like you're crazy, you know. So I don't want to do that either.
Right on. I just kind of was curious, what rhyme or reason you had there. I think that's good enough explanation. I know as a parent, sometimes, you instinctively know this is the right way to do this, but you don't always have that logical basis right in the front of your mind as to what you're putting to it. You kind of react and do whatever it is you felt was necessary, and then afterwards reflect and go, where was I coming from with this?
Exactly.
Go ahead. Sorry, man. Yeah, when it comes to critical thinking, that was something that I was never taught very well. I was raised to kind of, question things, but in a strange way, man. It was, to give you an example, when I was 5 years old, I stopped eating. I wouldn't eat any more food. My mom was like, why won't you eat? And because I had this idea that I came up with, I thought people were hollow. I thought when you ate your food, I didn't realize what shit was. I didn't realize that was your food coming out your ass. So I thought people would die because they ate so much food, it would start from their toes and all that food would fill up. And when it got to your head, then you died. And I didn't want to die, so I just stopped eating. And I didn't eat for a couple of days until someone sat me down and explained the process of defecation.
Wow.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's awesome, Zach.
You poor baby.
I
think from this point on, we're going to have to call you the Hollow Man.
Hollow Man. You know, ironically, how I came up with this theory was fucking Easter Bunny. I had a chocolate Easter Bunny. I bit into it, and it was hollow. And I started putting other peeps and shit inside of him, and that's how I came to the conclusion that, fuck, this is how we're going to die when you're full.
That is so funny. I don't even know what to. You've kind of completely derailed my thinking at this point, man.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Kids say the damnedest things. What can I say? You know, one of the things that I do differently over what I've seen other parents do is I don't make nakedness a big deal at all. So, you know, like I've never had, if, you know, Regan has a three-year-old charged into the room and I was in the middle of being intimate, I never had him stop and actually question what I was doing. He'd just walk in there and start talking to me. And then, you know, of course, if I needed to attend to him, that was what I did. Or if I didn't need to attend to him, I would, you know, tell him whatever I needed to answer and let him run on doing his thing. Now, as he's gotten a bit older, you know, obviously I avoid having to be in that situation, but at the same point, he's not overly obsessed. Like, he's got a friend of mine's daughter is a couple years older than him, and she, like, she's really kind of weird about the whole thing. Like, you'll be in their bathroom peeing, and I found this out firsthand. She would have literally opened the door to see if she could see what was going on in there. And she seemed very obsessed with that because, well, I mean, they're not even allowed to, you know, be naked in the bathroom getting into the shower. It's like you get naked right as you get into the shower, close the curtain, and then you turn on the water and everything, and that's how they've kind of been raised. But I always thought that was kind of weird, especially when I'd seen my friend's daughter getting more and more interested in what the opposite sex's anatomy looked like. I just think that it kind of throws up the curiosity in an area that there shouldn't be curiosity in, if you know what I mean.
I agree. And I think that a lot of the uncomfortableness that parents have with a lot of subjects is what makes kids so attracted to them a lot of times.
Right, it makes it taboo, right. You know, which it shouldn't be taboo. Nakedness should be, you know, accepted when it's appropriate or when it's, you know, it shouldn't be made to be taboo, because then they're going to have a fixation. And if that fixation isn't answered, then it's going to become a compulsion.
Yeah, I never treated as a taboo either. I mean, as a matter of fact, I still walk around the house in my underwear, and my son is almost 16, so it's not a big deal.
Right. It's actually kind of interesting because my son's mother has had quite the opposite philosophy in her house. When we were first trying to teach Regan how to potty train and everything, he realized that his member would get hard if he squeezed it. What this ultimately led to was my son's mother telling him that it was a dirty thing, that nobody wanted to see it, and he was to keep it hidden. Well, of course, when I found out about that, I just flipped the fuck out. And I tried, you know, putting in place the confidence that it was okay in him, and that what she was telling him was because it's not appropriate sometimes, rather than the fact that it's actually a dirty thing. But what the end result of that was is up until just about a month ago, he would not stand up and pee, because he did not want to touch it, because his mother told him that it was dirty. And so I had a big fight with him in getting him to stand up and pee. I know that's one of the things that he has to be able to do prior to getting into school, or if he's going to face some major criticism from his peers. So, after, you know, a bunch of forcing him to actually stand there, you know, with it in his hand until he actually went pee. You know, there was a lot of fighting and everything between him and I, but now that he understands that it's okay to touch it and that was just crap, he's gotten to be where he's a lot better about it, and that's a very good thing. As a matter of fact, I don't know that most kids his age would actually come to their parent and say, hey, I've got this problem here, when there's something wrong down there, but he, he's come to tell me a few times that he's had an issue. He got to a point where he wasn't doing a very good job cleaning his backside and was getting very sore because of it. And I don't know how many kids, you know, their parents actually have to, you know, pin their kid down and take a look to know what's going on. But, you know, he came to me and said, look, you know, Da, there's something really wrong. It's sore. And so I was able to actually, you know, get medicine on it for him. And then I explained to him that he had to keep it clean or it was going to do that again. And so now he makes it a point to make sure that he keeps it clean. As a matter of fact, the little thing between him and I is one more sheet, you know, one more sheet of toilet paper, just to be sure. You know?
Shit, Beast, you educated me. Is that why my ass always hurts all the time? Damn.
That was my reasoning for the circumcision issue. I did all the research beforehand, and it wasn't a religious thing for me. It was more of a hygiene thing because he is a little boy, and you can only be after him as much and for as long as you're allowed to because, you know, they get to a certain age, and they don't want mommy checking out their junk. So for me, it was a hygiene thing. So I did the circumcision.
Yeah, most women get sold on the hygiene thing by their doctors. But, you know, reality, they have soap, and if you have better hygienic practices, you don't have a problem. I mean, Christian society practice circumcision widely, but there's a lot of populations in the world that do not, and I don't see a lot of people walking around with sore dicks.
Yeah, that's always been the argument, you know, that's always been the... But in hindsight, I probably, you know, had I given it more thought, you know, I thought I had given it enough thought, you know, I probably wouldn't have done it because I've heard men argue it ad nauseum about, you know, taking away sensitivity and, you know, what right do we have to alter, you know, their penis. But, yeah, that was my reasoning for doing it with hygiene.
Yeah.
Right, I could see where you're coming from on that because I know that little boys go through a phase between about 5 and 9 years old where getting them into the freaking bathtub is like wrestling an alligator.
Yeah, I'd have to be like the cock Gestapo, really.
Right, and smegma does not take long to form either. So, I honestly think that the hygiene thing still applies. And I bet you, if I went out there and hit up like Snopes or something, I would find that the opposite is actually myth. But you know. Then again,
are you circumcised,
you see? Pardon me?
Are you circumcised?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
So there's no mode of comparison, that's, you know. You know, that's always the counter argument too. It's always the men that are already circumcised that are saying, no, you shouldn't circumcise. But you know, if they don't have a mode of comparison, then you know.
Right. Well, my whole thought process in it. It is very simple. I know that little boys and little girls, and particularly little boys, and during that age range, are hard to get into the bathtub to clean, and so they're not going to pay the proper attention. Even if you teach them good hygiene practices, they're not going to give it the full attention that it needs. So,
I still have to fight with my you know, soon-to-be 16-year-old about pissing on the damn toilet, too. It's a big ass hole. I mean, it's huge. You can't get it in? Come on.
I was kind of lucky in that I didn't actually get to be the one that made the choice at whether or not Regan was going to be circumcised. His mother has an absolute despisal for the uncircumcised penis. To a point where, I mean, she's often talked about hacking it off for people. Anyway, we've got...
When I see it, I kind of back away, and I question the hygiene immediately.
Right on. We've got about 30 seconds left in today's show, guys, so I want to thank everybody for coming out. And I guess that's pretty much it.
Cool. Good topic.
All right. See you guys next tomorrow.
Indeed.
Thank you for listening to the interview. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by CC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's your discretion to come along. Special thanks to Dad, the Rocky Aroma, for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International.